Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is a curious little exchange in Parliament between Minister of High Education, Bladen Zamande, and a DA MP, MP Badenhorst. DA MP Frederick Badenhorst said, quote, while criticizing Zamande's record, you had absolutely no impact on getting more female students into STEM subjects in your last posting. Are you going to double down on your failed strategies, or was it time for you to step aside for somebody who is everything that you are not? Progressive, honest, competent, and preferably female. So, Nzimande was the Minister of Higher Education for Science and Innovation, but now he's just the Minister of Science, Technology, and Innovation, so he lost higher education. Nzimande's response was, I think, rather interesting. He said, quote, I'm not ashamed of the work that I have done and that I was part of the transition that dislodged the apartheid regime, which to me personally was one of my biggest achievements, because this country would not be where we are, and we are not going to allow a situation where those who are still looking back, they want us to go back. We are no longer going back. Even as the ANC, we might have gotten 40%. Yes, it's a setback, but we are not going to allow our country to regress. I don't understand the importance of your question. Are you asking the president to appoint somebody else? I'm glad he's unlikely to listen to you. And Makone, you know, it just strikes me that it's almost as if he was replying to a different criticism. There's some sort of vague allusion to, oh, I did good work to end apartheid, but he doesn't talk anything of his time running the higher education system, which, by basically all accounts, seems to have been a pretty disastrous one. What do you make of this exchange?
Yeah, Nick, I think he made a mistake though when he said he's the Minister of Education. I think he's now Minister of Science, Innovation, and
Yes, Technology. Only science. Yeah, no, yeah. He's not. He's not higher education anymore. He lost that in the formation of the GNU.
Indeed. Unfortunately, that just means he's been given another critical portfolio, you know, generating science and innovation and technology. A big opportunity for him to mess that one up as well. But I agree with you. I think actually his admission is what we should take from that. He does say that he doesn't actually understand the question. And the question has nothing to do with looking back into the past. It's about those progressive virtues of like putting women in positions because they are women. That's what Mr. Badenhorst was really confronting him about and saying, well, he should step down if he truly believes those values that he touts so proudly. But obviously, those people are lecturing us, the mere people, and they themselves have no intentions of abiding by their own rules, let alone their beliefs. I'm quite annoyed by the media running with that statement about apartheid as the headline. I think it's indicative of how much racial peddling the media participates in, because that question is a legitimate one that was put to Mr. Nzimande, and it has nothing to do with apartheid. Apartheid, as usual, is an effective scapegoat, and now he gets away with not answering the question rather than, you know, dealing with the merits of that confrontation being put to him by Mr. Badenhorst.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a thing we hear so often, particularly in Parliament, actually, where the ANC often, in response to criticisms of things it's done, you know, maybe in the last 5 years or in the last 10 years, will say, oh, you just want to take us back to apartheid, or things were so much better than when we took over in 1994. And you're like, that's not the criticism being made of you. You know, we're not asking about your record 30 years ago. We're asking about your record in the last 10 years, in the last 5 years, in the last 2 years, where the failures have been manifest and are very easy to point to. There's sort of, you know, the ANC just kind of is unable to deal with the fact, particularly, I think, some of its older, more ideological members, that its programs in so many places have just not worked, particularly since the ANC departed from the Thabo Mbeki policies of the 2000s and embraced the kind of Zuma, SACP, Kasatu stuff of the you know, Jacob Zuma and Ramaphosa, early Ramaphosa era. And, you know, until they sort of come to grips with this, I think it's going to be very difficult for the ANC to make real changes as part of the GNU. It first has to recognize that there is a problem before they can change how they behave. Okay, let us move on to our next story. And this is also reflecting what's going on in the government for national unity. So, after some of these public spats, particularly between the ANC and the DA about the course and legislation of the government of national unity, there has been an agreement by President Ramaphosa to create a sort of clearinghouse, a place to discuss and organize and iron out differences away from the public eye, away from the media, and basically just calm down some of the tensions and hopefully sort out some of the very big differences between many of the GNU partners. So this group held its inaugural meeting on Wednesday, 3 months after the formation of the coalition government. And somewhat ominously, it's postponed all of the difficult decision-making to the next meeting, which is going to be held on the 30th of October. Okay, so it's not that far in the future, but still, not always, I think, the best thing to start off by kicking the difficult choices down the road. They also say at the next meeting, they will finalize the terms of reference of the next meeting. It will deal with the contentious issues around the Bella Bill. That's the Education Reform Bill, which will centralize decision-making in the provincial departments and take it away from schools and parents and governing boards. The meeting will also deal with challenge. This is a quote: deal with challenges at provincial and local government level, and is appreciated that contradictions are inevitable in coalition governments, and that learning from countries who have such coalitions is the best mechanism to employ towards achieving the goals set out in the statement of intent. That's from Paul Mashatile, who's the chair of this organizer, this discussion group. His spokesperson said that. So, Makone, this is probably a good development for the stability of the GNU. Having a place to actually discuss things behind closed doors. It's very difficult for politicians to have honest conversations in public, because when they do, it always turns into a grandstanding fight where everyone is just trying to smear everyone else and come out, on top. That being said, at the end of the day, some choices are going to have to be made. Are they going to implement NHI? Are they going to implement all of the clauses of the Bella Bill? Is there going to be some kind of reconfiguration? Until those choices are made, these problems are going to keep coming up again and again. What do you make of the chance of success of this thing?
I think that the GNU will rise and fall on how they decide to resolve those disputes. As we saw with the first iteration of government national unity that we had in 1996, that ultimately led to the new National Party leaving the then government of national unity and choosing instead to lead the opposition benches. It was over one side of that GNU feeling unheard and therefore not able to make a difference for its own constituency. And I think that will be the bane of the GNU's existence. It has already proven to be a thorn in their side because there's only so much compromise or drawing the line in the sand that can be done, as we've seen with some of those utterances, specifically from the DA. So I think this is a good idea for them to have a platform or a format, a mediation format through which those big disagreements are ventilated and disputed and argued. I also think this is such a win for our democracy because what we've learned as like an advocacy group, being the Institute of Race Relations, is that a lot of those public platforms where, discussion and verbose interactions, disagreements about legislation is supposed to take place predominantly through parliament, like when you're disputing the passing of a legislation and you submit your arguments for why, those things are really just done for administrative purposes. They're not taken seriously because those legislations will be passed despite many quality documents provided in opposition to the passage of those legislation. And then, as we saw with the NHI, after its passage, do they then go, oh, well, we should have listened to the IR's arguments, for example, or the South African Health Association's arguments as to how else the national health system can be improved? That's just one example of many, right? Is that a lot of the public institutions that are supposed to facilitate debate and discussion over legislation and how the country should be governed have ultimately not worked. And so I think the GNU taking the time to sort of create that structure, even though it's going to be internal, it's going to be for GNU members predominantly, I again think it's an opportunity for real representation of different South African views presented by all the GNU partners. There's enough of them that there'll be a diversity of views. We already know that they don't agree on everything. If majority of the things they don't agree on, but at least there will be a platform for different ideas to be presented and for debate, which is actually one of the things that I think the GNU in their founding statement said, that they'll be making evidence-based decisions. So let's see how much of a role evidence is actually going to play and how our policy is structured and how our institutions are formed moving on through this GNU. So it gets a big thumbs up from me. I can't wait to actually see how it begins to facilitate discussion and debate between different ideological lines in South Africa. We haven't had that opportunity in government before.
No, I think that's very true. And I hope that the opportunity is taken advantage of, as you say. You know, as for evidence-based policymaking, look, I think this is more an aspirational goal than the thing that's necessarily going to be sort of entirely possible. Politics is unfortunately the business of negotiating an enormous number of competing interests, views, and power structures. And so it's something to aspire towards, to move towards, although not something perhaps we shall ever reach. But the closer we get to evidence-based policymaking, the better the lives of millions of South Africans will be. Going forward. And let's talk a little bit about what happens when you don't make very good decisions in government. And this is what's been going on in Mogale City, which is the municipality that governs much of the West Rand in Gauteng. So the Department of Water and Sanitation has since 2019 given Mogale City 307 million rand for the express purpose of fixing Mogale City's sewage treatment plants. I think we have talked about this a little bit on the show before, but Mogale City is currently in the midst of a sewage crisis. 12 of the municipality's 22 sewage pump stations are broken, and two of the three wastewater treatment plants are not processing any sewage. This has meant that Mogale City is dumping an enormous amount of raw, untreated sewage directly into rivers and various water sources around the municipality, including in areas that are affecting the tourism sites around the Cradle of Humankind, which is based in Mogale City. This, of course, has all sorts of downstream effects. You know, anyone living near this stuff is smelling this terrible thing. They're at risk of disease. The water supply just generally is being polluted, and means that when this water eventually gets back into the water system, it needs to be treated very thoroughly to become safe to drink. It's an absolute nightmare. And yet, despite this 307 million rand given by the national government to Mogale City, apparently it's not been spent to fix the problem. Mogale City says, whoops, we don't have enough money, we need 100 million rand more. Which, you know, one really has to scratch your head, like, what exactly did they do with all of that money? They say that they have failed to maintain, they admit they failed to maintain the infrastructure, but they also blame theft of copper cables, metal for scrap metal, as well as a lack of investment in infrastructure exceeding the design capacity of the infrastructure that's already in place. Because, of course, the population of a place like Mogale City has grown quite a lot over the past couple of years, and yet the infrastructure has not kept pace. They point out that many of these sewage treatment plants were built in the 70s, when the population and infrastructure was much smaller. Makone, you know what kind of strikes me about this report, I think it's from News 24, is just how Mogale City seems to be talking about this problem as though they have nothing to do with it, as though it's just happening, as though no one made any choices that got here. It's just, it's like inflicted upon the municipality. What do you make of this?
I would just like to know when we are going to put an expiration date on this excuse that a lot of our infrastructure was built in the 1980s or 70s or 60s, when there were fewer populations and then apartheid government was only rendering services. I mean, we are 30 years into our democracy. And as you rightfully point out, Nick, we've certainly discussed this issue in discussing Percy Stewart, which is the wastewater treatment plant that runs across the cradle of humankind. And so these problems have been around, have been diagnosed, have been documented, have been discussed. You've even discussed how money was put aside as provision to address those issues, and yet nothing has been done. So this is not a problem of constraints in infrastructure. This is just poor management, and it is been the case for the past 30 years that, yes, we have infrastructure that's aging, but we've also set aside budgets dedicated to the maintenance and to the refurbishment and to the expansion of that infrastructure. Because I'm sure they knew 20 years ago what we know now, that 20 years from now, there'll be a lot more people moving into Johannesburg, moving to the cities. And so you will need greater infrastructure to accommodate all those people. So I would like to slap an expiration date on these excuses, because we cannot be lulled by them anymore. People should be infuriated by this, because they are genuine health risks to just fumes from fecal matter leakages. It's totally unacceptable. I realize South Africa is a third world country, but surely we're better than this.
No, definitely. And, you know, this is a direct result of all of these bigger sort of things that we criticize in government, stuff like preferential procurement, BEE premiums on things, CADA deployment, stuff like that, because the money was made available. But the reason it's not enough, the reason it hasn't been spent properly, is because it's been scraped off the top to the point where it was no longer enough money to cover the needs to build very inefficient projects. So, you know, the government has done many capital development projects where they built, you know, new houses or new streets or new electricity grids, all these kind of things over the last 30 years. But so often it's been at a massively inflated price because, well, caterers needed to eat. And the consequence now is that, you know, you just need to keep pouring more and more money in for a less and less efficient system. And who suffers? Well, everyone for a start, but more especially the poorest South Africans, who cannot escape living by the river filled with sewage, who don't have any other options, or perhaps for drinking water, than a badly maintained, rusty municipal water pipe in their area. So these are the people very specifically who are being hurt by some of the ANC's policies that it clings most aggressively to while in government. Any final thoughts, Mkhwanazi?
And this is what we mean by value for money procurement, right? Rather than procurement on the basis of race or sex or any of those characteristics that people are born into. It's procurement that actually means your money gets to do what it has been set aside to do, and that that project is actually completed. Otherwise, we will continue to pay for corruption, as we did with Eskom, as we did with and continue to do with Transnet and other logistical issues, as we do with crime, right? With our own individual lives, our health, and certainly with increased rates and taxes, which we've all seen the increases on the statements from the municipality, right? And until we put a stop to this through ending BEE, through ending racialization of any kind in government, we should accept this then as the standard. This is what we get in exchange for BEE. A whole
yes, exactly.
Equal matter, to put it mildly.
A bit of a shitty situation overall. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.